students offering opportunity in every direction. In Flagstaff, at community colleges around the state and online. Learn more at nau.edu.
Welcome to our show, Examine Life, on KKRN at 88.5 FM in Bella Vista at Round Mountain.
I'm Steve.
And I'm Pat.
And tonight we're going to talk about those visible and invisible taxes and fees that we pay to keep our wonderful government in working order.
First of all, views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the program host, guests, participants, and not necessarily those of KKRN Community Radio and Acorn Community Enterprises, or the underwriters of this station.
How many of you out there are aware of just how much you pay through every economic orifice you have?
Yeah, the cost of bureaucracy is pretty high.
There's, you know, we talk about taxes and everything, but that's like the tip of the iceberg when you think about all the fees. And there's a lot of nuances to these fees, you know, how they cause corruptive acts and so on.
We're all familiar with our personal income taxes. You know, we pay those every April 15th, and some of us that are self-employed pay quarterly taxes, and we have property taxes we pay a couple of times a year, and on and on and on. But we're going to talk about them a little more detailed, and also about where some of that money goes.
Right, and not just taxes, but fees that, you know, functionally they're taxes. But they're called fees, so they can say, oh, no, we've cut taxes.
And the impact of mandates by the government that cause costs that are the same as a fee or a tax.
Right. You end up paying money because you have to, regardless of where it goes.
On your personal income tax, there are seven brackets currently. And that's a minimum of 10% tax everybody pays, and that's on earned wages, or a maximum up to 39.5% for the feds. The state goes from 1% to 13.3%.
And one of the things I'd like to point out, one of the nuances I previously mentioned, is about the brackets. I learned this in my own life that, you know, those brackets, there are some pretty wide margins. And so there can be a point at which you think you finally started to take some of that money that you spent and some of that personal money that you invested in your business, you start to make a little better money, and all of a sudden, one year, you find yourself in the next tax bracket up. And think about it. That's like buying the cheapest house in a really nice neighborhood where you are earning the least amount of money of anybody in that tax bracket, but you're paying the same taxes as the guy making the most amount of money in that tax bracket. That's what I hate about bracketing.
And you don't know when you cross over that bracket because of all the deductions and loopholes and all the things that we have to figure out all these pages in our income tax.
Yeah, no matter how slick or efficient your accountant is, they can't really give you a definitive answer till the end of the tax year.
And so you slip into that bracket unknowingly.
Yep. And property taxes, you may not notice what's in there because your lender pays them directly for you. So if you're not the kind of person who pays attention to your finances, you just kind of pay your property taxes and you don't think about it. And most people don't. I mean, we're so overwhelmed with everything else. And then, of course, a lot of us are busy watching television and not, I don't want to deal with property taxes. I have to pay them anyway. But a lot of those initiatives that you vote for go into some of those property taxes. So you're asking for them when you're voting without educating yourself.
And those are paid in April and December by your lender or by you if you don't have your account impounded. In California, we also have something called a rural fire fee, which is $114 on every dwelling unit on that property.
Yeah. If you If you have a guest house or a livable motorhome on your property, it's twice that. And this is for fighting fires. On Pat's property bill, she was talking about a fire service tax of $20 for the Millville fire area, mosquito abatement fees, community college taxes. That, you know, when you vote on some of these local initiatives, you're voting for these line items to be added to your property taxes. And then when you get them, you think your taxes have gone up, and really it's kind of like the fees have gone up and assessments have gone up.
And these don't include assessments like for sidewalks, sewer, water pipelines that they add to your neighborhood and then add an assessment to your tax bill.
Or like downtown when they use our taxes to pay for a fountain that a bunch of people are bathing in so they can't run the water in it. But some people thought it would make us look like a grown-up city.
And property taxes are interesting because Prop 13 mandated that it was 1% of the sales price of the house. And through time, they've added all these additional percentages or these assessments or these fees. But it all adds up. Even the schools, like we have a community college tax on my bill of $23 every 6 months. Or no, annually, I'm sorry. And you don't think about that, or the mosquito abatement fee of $20 every year. But that's over and above the taxes that we pay and the bonds that we pay for school districts or anything else. This is standard on every property tax bill in the state.
And we have the state paying our state income tax. It says that 30% of our income tax for the state go to the education, K-12. And here we are, we're still adding more fees on locally because apparently 30% of the state budget of billions is not enough.
Plus 8.7% for higher education, yet I have on my tax bill a community college tax and a Shasta Unified School District fee of $82.42 over and above the $23 to the community college.
And see, people who hear us talking like this want to say, well, you're against education. And it's not about that. It's about throwing money into a sinkhole. Apparently, it's not being done correctly. And no one seems to want, well, half the population doesn't seem to want to start holding those in charge into making a more efficient operation that actually teaches kids what they need to know to survive.
And those bonds that were just passed in the propositions on the last election, they're not even added into these bills yet. They may not take effect for 2 years after that bond is passed and they start collecting the money.
Right. And later on in the program, we'll talk about just some of the fees.
And where those tax dollars are going.
Right.
Property taxes are the one thing that stays local. Your local community collects property taxes and it stays in that community. Your income taxes go to state and federal governments. They're totally different. The one source of revenue for local government is property taxes.
Right. So those votes that you have for the supervisors and so on that spend your money and that come up with some of these local things, it's important that you educate yourselves in those votes as well, that you understand who you're voting for and what it is they want to do when you put them in power.
And you do realize our city council and our county supervisors make an excess of $100,000 a year.
Yeah.
That is a pretty nice salary in a community in Shasta County where our median price home is like $250,000. So that's a pretty good, healthy salary. We should hold their feet to the fire.
I'm still amazed after all these years that we have people, both elected officials and bureaucrats hired, you know, by state, federal, and county governments with these wonderful benefit packages and these vacation packages and healthcare packages and all of this stuff, and we still call them public servants. Like they're somehow just there to protect us, and they have no desire to help themselves. They're just there for us. They're serving us.
We can hope.
Yeah.
We can hope. One of the biggest expenses in California is owning a car. There's a lot of mandates on owning a car, and we'll just list some of the things. Sales tax you pay on a car when you buy it of 7.25%, or if you bring it in from another state, you still have to pay sales tax on it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the DMV fees when you register it, and every year those have to be renewed.
Right. And a lot of times when you buy a car out of state and you bring it into the state, it was, and I'm sure a lot of you are aware of this, it was set up for the smog requirements of that state, not for California's elite smog requirements. So there's a lot of extra cost. I bought a really nice older used car from someone in Oregon, and I think I paid $1,000 extra to bring it into the state.
Is that just for the smog?
The smog, and I forget what all the requirements were. It was a long time ago, but it cost a lot just to bring it back into California.
And then there is that smog that mandated smog check every 2 years after you get the vehicle that met smog when it was manufactured. If you buy a battery or tires for that vehicle, you pay a recycling fee when you buy them, not when you dispose of that product, but when you purchase it.
And you know, then you have the child protective seats, and you have to have those. And I remember the smog thing. The thing that annoyed me the most was that back when the catalytic converter was first mandated, that it was pretty evident that was mandated because of a relative of someone in political power who had that device. And so instead of just telling you to have clean emissions, they told you how to have clean emissions. And all that costs money, and those are fees that end up going into the state coffers.
And our gasoline taxes for just the road, the use of the road, their breakdown is, these are per gallon California gas and fuel taxes. The state sales tax is 2.25% per gallon. The local sales tax of 7.25 cents per gallon. The state excise tax of 39 cents per gallon. Federal excise tax of 18 cents per gallon. And the California designer additives, which is 12 cents a gallon.
Isn't this amazing?
Excuse me.
And the cap and trade fee oil companies pay, that's passed on to the consumer, is 10 cents per gallon, which goes to high-speed rail, number one of which haven't seen any evidence, and number two, I really don't want to see any evidence, but here we go.
And I'm not sure who wants it other than politicians who wants high-speed
rail. Well, politicians' friends.
Yes. So for every gallon of gas sold, there's over a dollar in taxes and fees. The producer who pumps it out of the ground,
that gets, evil guy,
yeah, he gets about 25 cents a gallon, and the middlemen get the rest.
So I hear a lot of complaints about these evil oil companies and their evil profits. So how many folks who feel that way, do they feel like the government is 100% evil and the oil companies are only 25% evil, or how does that actually work on your balance?
I don't know, but you hear a lot of grumbling when the gas goes to $4 a gallon.
Yeah.
And
Pat's fighting a real irritated throat tonight.
Yes.
So
I'm sorry.
She's very brave, and she's doing just fine so far.
We still also have toll roads, toll bridges. We pay to have that multi-person in the lane that you can go in. Those are often tolls in some parts of this state. So that's over and above the money that we pay for gas.
What's interesting is some of the things that Stossel has shown in his TV program in the past were when there were private toll roads, privately owned, people tended to actually take the toll roads when there were non-toll roads available because they were better roads.
Yes.
And when there were public toll roads available, toll roads, they still took the private toll roads because they were better.
Yes. Now, the toll bridges are usually, the money goes towards the maintenance of the bridge. But these toll roads, especially...
Well, that's where the money's sent.
Yeah. In Southern California, they still have a lot of toll roads, and they have that lane that you can pay to use that's supposedly faster because of the traffic congestion there. But there's an interesting book Jim Lacey's written that's called Taxifornia that really gets into how we pay taxes here in California that exceed the rest of the country.
And you know, we all I know some people like to say we don't, but we all do want to see good roads, good infrastructure, all of that. But some of us want to see that it's done efficiently, that it's that the money is spent in the best, most efficient way possible, with no excuses. No excuses for the bureaucracy. It works for us. And whenever it's inefficient, we should come down on them.
And I hate to see Caltrans picking up trash when we have prisoners that should be doing that. Even if it's in the county jail, that's what they should be doing out there, and not having to have Caltrans do that or weed abatement.
Right. There are other people who have nothing to do and have money coming in who could also do that. I think it would give them a feeling of self-worth. I've never forgotten about the man that I knew who was in his 40s who had a serious mental disability, and I had met him in the group home that he lived in, and he was a nice fellow and very, very challenged. But I remember when he got a job, and I knew it without talking to him because I saw him on a corner one day, and he had his lunchbox, and I have never seen, he was going to the recycle center where he'd gotten a new job. I've never seen a person so proud of themselves and so happy that they had a job. And we need to bring that back.
The sense of self-achievement.
It was incredible. Emotional.
Yeah. If you want to build anything in the city or county, it doesn't matter, a simple garage will cost thousands in permits and fees before you put a shovel in the ground.
Yeah. First it's planning and then zoning. And then if you don't need any of the costly corrections that they often make you do, then your neighbor has to get notices and see if there are any objections there. So I hope you're friends with your neighbors.
And every time you resubmit the plans for review, it costs you more fees.
And, we have to pay those to have everything reviewed and approved and all of these things by government employees who are on the payroll already. And so we're already paying them to do their job. What are these fees about exactly?
That is something that irritates me. These are government employees. They are all on salary or whatever, hourly rate, whatever it is. So their job is to do this very thing. And I don't care if it's IRS, if it's working for the VA, if it's working for the county or the city. They have a job that is supposed to be public service. And yet every time we do anything, we have to pay them to do the job. That somehow befuddles me.
And I don't know if there's any way to actually tally up, when you add these fees and the taxes we pay, how much we actually really pay. I mean, those of us who, do anything to our property or actually take an active place in society, how much it costs.
Yes.
The hidden costs and the things that we don't know where this all goes. We just know that there's an awful lot of it, and that most private businesses can do the same things with half the cost.
The red tape is very expensive. Another thing that irritates me to no end is the idea that some government employees, like in the VA, the IRS, get bonuses. Why do you pay bonuses for people who are on salary?
Right.
It was designed for people who worked on commissions or had to meet certain quotas. They got a bonus. But for a government employee, I don't get bonuses.
Especially when there's these big failures in government, and some of those, specifically those people, got bonuses. One thing I want to point out is San Francisco, which is arguably the city who believes in everything done by the government, their TSA is private.
Really?
Because their airport's important to them. And you know what? It's a very nice experience going through the San Francisco airport, not through downtown San Francisco, but going through the San Francisco airport's a very pleasant experience because their TSA people are private, not government.
Interesting when they're that is very interesting for the government, because most of the other airports are run somehow.
They're government TSA, yeah.
Mm-hmm. this new plastic bag issue is 10 cents. If you don't have a bag when you go into the store and you have to buy a bag, it's 10 cents or more. And it's supposed to go to the environment. Who is the environment?
Yeah. Well, some of it might get there. I mean, it was going to the environment before.
It's like that fire fee we pay goes into a fund that the governor has access to spend on what he sees fit.
Well, this takes
It's supposed to be for education.
If you want to know how it works, we go back to the lottery. Back in 1984, when they promised us, the lottery was going to really fund our schools, California Lottery. That was going to be a big deal. Well, shortly after they saw how successful the lottery was, the government, Duke Majan, I think that's how you say his name, he immediately essentially confiscated that money by cutting basically an equivalent amount of money that the state was paying for the schools so that the lottery money filled the gap that they created for the lottery money. So it didn't really benefit the schools at all in the way they had hoped. So I think that's kind of how it all works. They just want to have this money and don't want you being bossy and telling them what they should do with it.
Schwarzenegger did a similar thing with the road tax because it had a huge amount of money in and the government was facing a deficit. And so he just transferred through a new law, new regulation that they had passed. They massaged the law so that he could transfer $1 billion out of the transportation fund for roads into the general fund. So it's like, okay, who is this environment that this 10 cents? Think about how many bags. I've bought a lot of them lately because it's taking me a long time to remember to take a bag in the store.
I always forget to take mine, yeah.
So I have bought dollars worth of these bags in the last few weeks, and I want to know who's getting that money.
Well, see, I think that's probably the game. You know, if you have money that was taxed from you for the schools, nobody's watching, but theoretically, you have to spend it on the schools.
You assume so.
But if you kind of sneak it over into the general fund, then it all kind of gets mushy, and you're not really held that responsible for what you do.
I know, and
so
that's...
it's a pretty handy way to work. I wish I could do that in business. That would be a lot of fun.
Yeah, and I really, I remember this in the city of Reading, maybe 20 years ago, when they had money for the fountain. And all of these trails they added to the river trail, which is wonderful for tourism, but they closed all the public health facilities. And I asked one of the city council people about that, and he goes, well, they come out of different pockets. And I go, my money goes out of one pocket, and I'm assuming it's going into one pocket for the government, and I'd rather you spend it on mental health facilities than a fountain in front of City Hall.
That nobody can use because too many people were bathing in it that you're not helping.
But it goes back into that slush fundy thing where they have money that they can spend on something they want that is aesthetic or what they think is better to look at in the community than it is for this really the hard needs of the community.
You know, I actually participated once around 2007, I think. I was briefly a member of the... Trails and Bikeways Committee in Reading.
Mm-hmm.
The people that made up the committee, I'm probably going to irritate some folks now, but I was fascinated just to meet where these people come from, where their backgrounds are. And I sometimes would, when discussing it with one of the members, talk about, well, my people, where I came from, were on the street, and that's who I want to help. But these trails and bikeways were not made for those people. These are for people that think Reading needs to look prettier. We kind of want to be more like those big cities and be more progressive. And the meetings, as I recall, were held in some very well-equipped homes in very nice areas. And those were the people promoting it all, you know, so they could have a prettier city, not so that they could take care of the folks that really need it. That's where their interest was.
Well, Chico has a bag tax. Actually, they call it a bag tax. And they also have a bike tax called a bike license fee. Now, really, you're going to tax people to have a bicycle, which is how much better for the environment could that be?
Yeah.
And you're going to tax them.
Well, some taxes, like cigarette taxes, they deliberately supposedly tax them so that people will do less of it. So maybe that's what it is. They want more cars and fewer bikes. Maybe Chico has a secret that we need to figure out.
Maybe
they learned something about the environment. You know, more carbon in the air might offset that ice age that's going to be coming in the middle of the century. So maybe Chico's got a, you know, they're ahead of the game a little bit.
Maybe they are. There is such a thing as something called the Tax Freedom Day. You want to tell them what it is?
Well, Tax Freedom Day is if you put all of your money into taxes, how long would you have to work before you paid your yearly taxes? And I think this year, what did we say it was, April 30th in California? I don't have my form pulled up here.
April 30th.
And, of course, some states like New York, it's around May 7th, I think, or something like that.
May 11th, yeah.
And nationally, I believe it's April 26th?
24th.
24th. So that you would have to work for 4 months of the year before you would start being able to keep your money for yourself.
And that's
actually 5 months in California.
And that does not include any of the...
those fees.
That's right. This is strictly taxes.
Fees and assessments.
Taxes.
And
they figure, the website that I went and looked at about this, 33% of our income goes to taxes. And in 1900, it was just under 6% our income went to taxes.
If we look at... like DirecTV has a sales tax. Verizon has this interesting, all of the cell phone bills have this interesting thing called universal usage fee, which some long time ago was the idea that you could put telephones in the homes of people who couldn't afford them so they could call emergencies and so on. And the way this works out, free money always brings out the worst in people. That fee is about providing free cell phones to people. Well, the cell phone companies make money from those cell phones because the governments buy them or rent them from the cell phone company. And the national companies don't necessarily do anything corrupt. But I've heard stories about local companies and had undercover reporters go. And there are people on the street paid to hunt you down and talk you into getting a free government phone, even if you really don't qualify for it, because then that cell phone company is going to make some money. And so it invites corruption. And you say, well, those evil companies are always corrupt. No, there are people out there with three cell phones who shouldn't have them who are corrupt also. We're all corrupt to some degree or another. But anything like this just invites more corruption. And it's a fee. It's not a tax. It's a fee you have to pay on your cell phone bill so that people can have free cell phones.
Yeah, my Verizon bill actually had $1.96 in federal regulatory fees and PUC fees that totaled $392 as surcharges on my bill.
$3.92.
I'm sorry, $3.92 as surcharges on my bill of only $126. That's almost 4%. It is 4% of my bill. Frontier has $29.10 of taxes and surcharges. They actually put it on the bill.
And I'd like to know where that money actually goes.
Surcharges were originally considered a mark on a stamp. That was a surcharge on that stamp that was a tax also. Now it's defined as an additional payment, fee added, or an excessive seam load or burden on something. That defines it pretty closely. It's a burden that someone thinks that I should pay.
And it can't be called a tax. So we can say we're lowering taxes or the taxes aren't going up that much.
That's right. It's just a fee. And then remember, if you CRV fees, which is a recycling fee on our plastic in aluminum cans, we don't get the same amount that we paid. I remember as a kid, you had a Coke bottle. You took the bottle in, the nickel that you paid for the bottle, you got the nickel back.
Yeah.
You don't get that back now. Every TV and PC that is sold has a recycle fee attached to it when you buy it.
Probably a lot of it goes to support our wonderful schools that we feel are in complete crumbling state.
I don't know.
With all the money we are spending.
The recycling fees are, I'm assuming, more of that environment cup that this money is going into for some reason. They're doing something to improve the environment. And I'm thinking, well, if you're recycling, you should be improving the environment by not putting it in the dumps. Now, I put it, if you live in the city, you can put that in one of those recycling containers. And they do not pay you for it, but they get paid for it when they recycle it.
Yeah.
So Somehow that doesn't seem right either.
Maybe some of the money will go back to Chico to give them some low-carbohydrate snack bars for their bicycle riding, yes. Prevent the CO2 emissions from the bicycle riders. And
yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe so.
So are we ready to take a break?
Yes.
So this is Examine Life on KKRN 88.5 FM. And we're going to take a short break here in just a minute.
Yes. Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the program host, guests, and participants, and not necessarily those of KKRN Community Radio and Acorn Community Enterprises or underwriters of the station.
We'll return shortly.
Give me a kiss before you leave me, and my imagination will feed my hungry heart. Leave me one thing before we part. A kiss to build a dream on.
Join the discussion. KKRN boasts a variety of talk radio, both from local and syndicated sources. We want to stimulate thoughtful and meaningful conversation. KKRN can offer more real conversation because we are supported by listeners. You have a voice.
Make them believe they're true. Oh, give me your lips for just a moment, and my imagination will make that moment live.
The infinite possibilities of music are showcased by the eclectic panorama of song styles that you can find on KKRN Radio. You won't find our musical explorations on more mainstream commercially driven stations. From classic country to new age, from classic folk to classic rock, from blues to jazz, and music from outside our country. You'll find it all on KKRN listener-supported radio, radio that makes you listen.
KKRN 88.5 FM, and we're talking about taxes and fees tonight.
This is Examine Life, and I'm Steve.
I'm Pat.
We're going to talk about payroll.
And your paycheck, they take out from your paycheck, they take withholding for the federal government, they take out Medicare, Social Security, federal unemployment tax, California withholding, California disability, California unemployment, and it adds up to almost 33% of how much we make, and that does not include what your employer pays for you.
Right. Yeah. It comes out of both, and a lot of employees don't realize that the employer pays as much as they do or more.
With all of your withholding, the business has to match. So that federal and California withholding tax, however much you pay in that tax, the employer pays on also. And it doesn't go into your federal income tax. It just goes to the government. There is a minimum of $700 California corporate tax that your business owner pays every year. There is a use tax for your employer just to use his own furniture and equipment and fixtures. There is a business tax to the city of Reading if you're within the city limits, and a corporate official tax per person, per corporate official in your business. And you pay, your employer pays a tax on anything he leases.
Right. Going briefly back to property taxes in an industry I worked in, I still remember this. It was related to some equipment that we had to deal with in our industry being a little bit unique. When we started our business, we were trying to find out from the county how that tax was calculated. there literally was a moment during our multiple conversations over a period of probably a month or two, just trying to get information for our accountant so we'd know how to pay these taxes, when this young woman, you could tell by listening to her that she was, had moved closer to the phone, was shielding her mouth, and said, "We don't really know how to do this. And so just come up with a number." And this was a tax that this industry had been around since the 1970s. So the county, it wasn't that new to them, and they still hadn't figured it out. Just a little heads up.
Well, there's all these hidden fees to your employer. There's a training tax. There is a mandated health insurance. We'll get to that in a minute. But over and above your withholdings, they pay, company matches those, they pay Medicare and Social Security at a different level than you do. They pay unemployment and disability insurance at a higher rate than you do. And this is for each employee that they have. So the employment load is what they call, referred to it, the cost that is also matched. So if you think you're paying 33% for your income, he is too.
I just got a great text from someone about those fees and so on. And PG&E gives rebates, yet charges customers a fee to pay. So technically, you're paying for your own rebate.
Yeah, a tax on a tax. That's what that cap and trade tax is on gasoline. You pay a tax on that 10 cents that is passed on to you, which was the tax the oil company paid. This is how red tape gets paid for, the bureaucracy.
It's like our bumper music. Isn't it a wonderful world?
Yeah. But some of the mandated fees that your employer also pays, things like family leave, sick time, vacation time, pregnancy leave for you or your a spouse whose wife's having a baby, are considered compensation. And the employer has to pay for those as tax as if it were taxable income, even though you didn't work.
You didn't
you
work,
weren't
but
there.
You got compensated for not working, and your employer had to pay taxes on that, in addition to compensating you for not working.
That's right. So it's,
and if you're an employee, you're thinking, well, those rich son of a guns need to pay that. But that's because we're all selfish, not just entrepreneurs.
That's true. But, I mean, it's, we don't think about those are also taxes and fees that we have to pay for in the product that is being sold to us by whomever you work for.
Right.
Because he can't just take it out of his pocket. He's got to make money to pay for that.
Right.
And the health care costs, the fees to your employer, this is just astronomical to me. There are four fees that he pays regardless of the company. One of them is a market share fee. One is called a patient-centered outcome research institute fee.
for clinical outcome research. And I've seen the results of some of that research, and it's, well, let's just say research is what it is.
My argument with research is our state supports a number of state universities. Why can these universities not do this research for free? Because they're trying to train students how to do research.
Well, because somehow you'll have to come to the conclusion that those evil corporations are rich and greedy, and just leave it at that.
Okay, three, a transitional reinsurance fee, which I have no idea what that is, a risk adjustment program fee.
Which basically, I believe that one has to do with the fact that the insurance companies who supported this law, are not making the money they wanted to make.
And if you have over 50 workers, it's mandated you have health insurance or you pay a fee of $2,000 per employee.
And they determine how much and what kind of health insurance you have to have for your employees. So even if it's things that they don't need, you still have to have it.
Now, this is over and above what you pay in medical premiums, co-pays, and deductions from your paycheck. The employer pays in addition to this for that health care.
And, you know, as a former business owner, you have employees, you offer them a 401k plan. I'm always amazed at the ones who don't take advantage of it. You know, and you're matching them. You're giving some of your own money to the employees.
And those have still mandates
yeah.
and
yeah.
restrictions that the employer has to comply with. And if there's a union involved, that's another layer of compliance regulations and costs, because employers, if you pay union dues, the employer also has to pay union dues. So it has gotten so complicated to be an employer that most businesses now must have what they call a regulatory compliance officer that does nothing but shovel paper and make sure that you comply with all of the government regulations for everything you do, all the mandates. It's gotten outrageous.
And that job is, my wife is very good at being organized, and I had talked to her about, we were talking about compliance officers today, and how it's an important job to the employer, because they have to meet all those mandates, and it's just difficult.
This is over and above the human resource department that pays you paychecks.
Right, and it's just all these things you have to comply with. We had a officer come into our office some years ago because the CPAP machines that we have are considered to be dangerous medical devices. And so he said, you're going to have a chain link fence in your warehouse with a locked gate on it to keep all these dangerous masks and machines in. And he came back, and we showed him our plans for a 6-foot chain link fence. And he said, no, it's got to be 8-foot. And I almost blew it. I almost told him, well, I can climb an 8-foot fence. But he would have come back and said, you got to put a lid on it. So I never said anything. But it's these silly mandates. Those masks and those people sell them online and buy them at yard sales and so on. But we have to have a 6-foot chain link fence and in a warehouse.
And that costs the consumer. The EPA regulations on heavy trucks in like the 18-wheelers you see transporting goods will add $1 trillion over a 10-year period, costing every man, woman, and child in the United States $3,000 to cover those costs. People don't realize that every time there is a mandate or a regulation that's passed, somebody's got to pay not only to comply with it, but all of the things they have to do to keep in compliance with it. So that cost is passed on to the consumer in one way or another. And just on the trucking regulations, it's going to cost us each $3,000 per person to pay for that. That's outrageous when you break it down into dollars and cents.
Yeah. Yeah, it's and it affects, I mean, everything that we get supplied. I mean, how much comes through trucks? And I don't know really what the system on trains, how that all works. But
well, this is strictly trucking.
Right. And I know that trains are heavily involved with the government, so who knows where that goes. But for trucks, all that they transport, they have to make a living. So yeah, that cost's going to be passed on to you.
And let's get on to some of the other fun fees and costs that we have in our lives every single day that we don't even think about because they're not affecting us until we need that service. For example, the court costs. If you are in probate, if you have an adoption that's going on, if you have a traffic ticket and go to traffic court, you have to pay traffic court fees or probate court fees or adoption court fees. This is over and above what the court gets to run in their budget.
Right. Well, and what when you usually don't have to pay a fee to the court is when you bring a lawsuit against one of those evil companies for something that may or may not have actually been caused by them. And even if you lose, generally speaking, they have to pay the court fees anyway.
Well, there's always a filing fee just to file a court thing.
Right.
If you visit a state or a national park, say for a vacation, that your tax dollars bought that park, you have to pay a use fee to use the park. Even though we paid to buy it, those employees are on the federal payroll, we still have to pay.
And we pay environmental fees and all that already.
And if you want to cut a Christmas tree, it's $10 fee to just get a permit to cut your own Christmas tree. I remember when you could go out in the backyard and just cut a tree down.
Now, some of even your own trees you can't cut down.
Yeah, especially if they're real old. This is an interesting one that I found almost comical, and that's inheritance estate taxes. Inheritance is money left to you, okay, as opposed to an estate. The person that died had an estate, and it's the total value of his assets. The federal government doesn't have any inheritance tax. They have estate tax, meaning on everything that person owned, not what he left to you individually. And that estate tax, if you're not the spouse, can be 40% if you're not that spouse. And if you're a spouse after $5 million, it's only the first $5 million exempt. And California is so complicated in their estate tax that it depends on whether you died with or without a will, where you died, what relation you are, on and on and on, how many surviving other people that can claim on it. So probate has gotten very expensive in California if someone dies and leaves you anything.
And if you win the lottery or game prize of more than $500, of course, the IRS gets first shot at your tax money.
Yeah, when you hear about these lotto people that win $20 million and when they walk away, they have eight.
Yeah.
The rest of it went to the state and federal government.
And by the way, all you people to buy those tickets, understand that statistically you're more likely to suffer from winning all that money than to benefit from it. Just saying.
Yes. Interestingly, the only money you can get and not pay a tax on up front is a loan. But the government has figured out if you, for any reason, you don't pay that loan back, like, say, a foreclosure on houses, the IRS taxes you what they call debt relief because you were relieved of the money and never paid the debt and never paid money on the money you got from it, regardless of the fact that you bought a house with it. It's still considered a taxable event.
Yeah, and see, I don't quite get that. You lose the asset, which you should because you didn't pay for it any longer, but you're not getting any money. You've paid the loan payment until you didn't pay the loan payment.
And all those loan fees when you got the loan.
Right, and so I'm not sure. I don't know how that works. I'm surprised that hasn't been more contested, but you know, I'm not one who supports people who back out on their loans. That's not an honorable thing to do, regardless of what the economy did after you got the loan. You made an agreement. So I'm not supportive of that action, but this tax seems a little nebulous to me. But, you know, it's kind of like those pockets. Yeah, maybe they got it, maybe they don't.
But the problem is, think about it. If you bought a $150,000 house and you have a $130,000 loan on it and you get relieved of that debt and the government goes, well, you made $130,000. That's a lot of tax.
Yeah.
That's not a small amount of money. California waived that fee for a few years when the recession hit and a lot of people were in foreclosure. They allowed that not to be charged. But if you do it now, the state will even charge you.
Right. And, you know, I my biggest concern is not the taxes, but what they do with them. You know, and we seem to think that, you know, it's just government or that's what it really costs or whatever. Anytime you look at business, you realize that that's not what it really costs. That's just the way we do it. When the Defense Department, you know, when somebody bids a new airplane for $500 million or $500 billion or whatever the price is, and then, you know, it ends up double in price, instead of saying, no, we're not going to pay you for the plane, they go ahead and pay the extra money. Things like that. Government, it's just not an efficient way to spend money. And so it's not that we don't need a government. We just need to minimize what they're involved in, I think.
Well, if you think about it, we as individuals have to balance a budget or the checkbook every month. You can't spend more than you have unless you put it on your credit card, and inevitably you're going to have to pay that. So it's not like you're never going to have to pay for it. And yet we allow the government to continue to spend and just keep taxing us for what they want to acquire without cutting out some of the inefficiencies or tightening their budgets. Do we really need everything that we're getting from the government? No. A lot of the stuff, like, do we need a high-speed rail? No, I don't think we do. Maybe Southern California needs one to Las Vegas, but I don't think that we do. And those are kinds of things that I don't think I want to pay for. But I can't pick and choose what I get to pay for.
Right, and I was reading about some of the ways that our money gets spent, and someone made a comment in one of the articles about, you know, how wonderful it is of the number of people that our welfare programs and so on keep out of poverty, and that wasn't originally the purpose of this. It's not to keep people out of poverty. Poverty, in my case, was what motivated me to try to build a life, to try to get an education at my own expense, to work hard. Poverty was a motivator for me. We shouldn't be taking poverty away from people. We should be sure that they don't starve and don't freeze to death. But they have some motivation to go out and make something happen. Our taxes should be to catch them on the way down and gently deposit them on the sidewalk, not to keep them in a hammock, well, even a holy hammock.
That's called the safety net programs of the federal budget, and it accounts for 10% of the federal budget.
But it's not a safety net. And my point being that our taxes should be spent wisely. Taxes are there because they're a real necessity, and I think we've grown beyond the idea of a necessity. I mean, look at some of the scientific studies we're doing on shrimp on treadmills and ridiculous things like that.
Well, even if you think about it, your dog license fee. Do we really need to charge someone to have a license for their dog? We know they have to have shots. We encourage people to neuter their pets. Do we really have to charge them to have a license for that pet?
And most of that stuff's done by shelters now, isn't it?
I don't know, but it just seems unfair that every single thing we do, like that bike thing, with a tax on bicycles, you cannot even receive a gift from your mom or dad and not have to pay tax on it, even though they gave it to you. This is how ridiculous the government has gotten on taxes. And these are the kinds of things that we don't think about, but this is what fuels the red tape that we fight when we have to deal with the government on any level.
Right. I think that's something we don't realize, is that I think most people don't pay attention to the little details of what they're spending money on, what they're being forced to spend money on, and where it's going. No one asks where it's going and how much should that cost.
And let's talk about where it goes. The state of California, for example, the Franchise Tax Board website, this is what they say they spend their money on. And that was, again, that 32%, 62% of the state budget goes towards schools, either higher education, 39% goes towards education, either in schools or higher education. And health and human services, 31% of it. Those are the two biggest costs in the state of California, is health and human services, 31% and 39% for education.
And it's amazing, you know, we're all these local initiatives and even some of the new state initiatives, two big ones, about the shoddy state of our school system is why they're demanding more taxes on school. What's happening to that 30%? California's budget is billions of dollars. Where's that money going?
It's phenomenal. I don't know. There's got to be a lot of inefficiencies or overpayment somewhere.
It would be okay if they said we're spending that much money on schools and look at how wonderful our students are doing, but they can't.
Well, what great shape the schools are in is not so great.
The guilt that they throw on you to get you to pass these new initiatives is our schools are in terrible shape. We need to do something. It defies logic. And I, again, all the wonderful ideas that people have about taking care of each other and taking care of the planet, I agree with all those. It's only when you introduce the idea of bureaucracy as a solution that we part ways, because we all believe the things we should do together, but no one wants to build a consensus and do it privately anymore like we used to in the real old days.
Yes.
They want to say, let the government do it, and I don't have to worry about it. I'll pay them some taxes.
And it gets out of control.
If I got too many taxes, I'll go on unemployment or I'll suddenly get disabled.
And the other thing we have is we suddenly have all these agencies. Okay, these are federal employees or state employees, and an example is in California, the general government cost is 4% of our budget. That doesn't include legislators or the governor. That's another 4.1% for legislative, judicial, and executive. So that's over 8% of money that you wonder where it's all going. The environment, we already spend 2%. On what we call environmental protection. That's before this 10 cents a bag kicked in this year. These kinds of things. Government operations is 0.6%. So that doesn't even include this general government figure. So you have to, and then there's labor and workforce development, which is what labor workforce are they developing, private or government? I think the government has gotten oversized.
And one of the problems with that oversizing is that, just take the one last item that you talked about, the, what was it, labor development?
Yes.
Who has the time, especially those of us who are working, who has the time to research the detail of what that actually is? Because there are websites that tell you what it is. Those aren't going to give you any truths.
No.
You have to go investigate. Who has the time to investigate that? There are watchdog groups and so on. But depending on which political side you're on, you either pay attention to them or you don't.
And what do they lump in there? It's like corrections and rehabilitation, they say, is 7.8% of the budget. That's a big amount of the budget for prisoners.
And this idea of, I worked in the prison system, and this idea of a California corrections that is a rehab, that idea was given up a long time ago. It's not a, there's nothing rehabilitative about it. Even the weights, you know, I remember when I worked there, there were weight machines but no weights, because if you gave the guy the weights, they beat him to death. They beat each other to death with them, so they had to take him away. There was no rehab going on.
Well, the other thing is it says corrections, 7.8%. You look at a prison, and there aren't that many guards there. So, and we haven't built a prison in a decade or more. So where is all that money going?
Well, it's going, you know, a prison, a medical, and that's another question we have, is when they count medical, how much of that is actually prisoner? Are they on Medi-Cal? That I don't remember. But I can tell you this, just about every medical protocol in the prison system is not based on good, what we call best practices of medicine. It's based on somebody's lawsuit. Because if an inmate fakes 10 heart attacks, and believe me, I was involved in this, and you show up for that 11th time that day, and you tell him, listen, just get up. His cellmate is immediately on the phone calling his family. You know what? He was having a heart attack, and they didn't do anything. Family sues the prison system. Rather than go through all that, the prison just pays up, and guess what? Now we have a new precedent, and we have a new medical protocol. That's probably a big chunk of the costs.
And I want to mention one thing about, you hear federal budget all the time about how expensive Social Security and Medicare is. Social Security accounts for 24% of the federal tax pie. Medicare, Medicaid, and other subsidies for medical insurance is 25%. The interest on our debt is 6%. Defense and international security assistance, which is like our war in the Middle East, accounts for 16%. And then the safety net programs account for 10%. That's the majority of our budget. There are some retirement government employees and veterans. They get 8% of the budget. Our infrastructure and transportation gets 2%. Education gets 3%. Science and medical research gets 2%.
Hi, this is Harry from Oakland.
So these are where your tax dollars go.
And I find it interesting that number 3 on the government tax receipt is the interest on the debt. This has been Examine Life. We've been talking about taxes and consequences tonight. We hope you've learned something. If we've made you feel good, send us an email at examinelife@kkrn.org. If we've made you feel angry, do the same thing. I'd love to have the discussion.
Good night.
Good night.